Thank you. It is wonderful to be here with you on this important anniversary in the life of the Lakehead Unitarian Fellowship, and to realize that I've now been part of your life for more than half of it as a fellowship, although the fellowship as a whole is older than me. That was a double entendre. I've been coming here for 35 years. It's hard to believe. And it is always a delight to be here with you, even if I do have an assigned topic. I'll let it go. I'll let it go. Since I feel singularly well qualified to address this particular topic, having spent my career on both sides of the border, although the United States has never actually let me live on their side for more than 120 days a year. Well, there are noteworthy differences between Unitarian Universalists in Canada and the United States. You use on both sides of the border are defined more by their similarities than by their differences. Although it is true that the precise nature of our public witness may vary by country or even locality, there is a remarkable commonality of values that transcends the international boundary. More than three decades of working with congregations on both sides of the border has convinced me that we're more alike than not. You wouldn't necessarily know that from attending a Canadian denominational gathering among Unitarian Universalists, but I believe it's profoundly true. But before exploring what it is that unites us as adherents of a common faith across an international boundary that separates us as citizens of different countries, I'd like to explore the provocative question. Does a distinctive Canadian Unitarianism even exist? After all, exploring the parallels and differences between UUs in Canada and the United States presupposes an identifiable Canadian Unitarianism to contrast with American Unitarian Universalism, which is, after all, the numerically dominant and historically older phenomenon. There was a time when there was no distinctive Canadian Unitarianism or Universalism, and I'm not talking about the time before the first Universalist and Unitarian congregations were organized in this country. I mean long after that. Long after that, when we had well-established congregations on this side of the border and yet still no distinct Canadian Unitarian or Universalist identity. There have been Universalist, Unitarian, and now Unitarian Universalist. It's hard to talk about our history because the title keeps evolving. But there have been such congregations in Canada for the better part of two centuries now. But if we're honest about their character, there was nothing that was explicitly Canadian about them other than their location. They were little different from congregations bearing the same labels in the United States and the British Isles. In the early years, their members were mostly expatriate Americans who were joined by Unitarian but not Universalist immigrants from England and Ireland, along with a smattering of Scots and the occasional Welsh Unitarian. It was long after Confederation, which for those of you who aren't familiar with the label, was the consolidation of the Canadian provinces into a single country in 1867. Let me get back to my place now. It was long after Confederation before native-born Canadians were found in significant numbers in the few congregations that existed in this country. The Universalists of Nova Scotia had migrated there from the coastal regions of New England, while those in Quebec had slipped across the border from Vermont and New Hampshire. In fact, it's been reputed that one American president was probably born in Quebec from the child of expatriate Americans who had done just such, well, slipping. It is a slippery slope if you live close to the Canadian-U.S. border. In any event, in Ontario, here in Ontario, the early Universalists were mostly from the Great Lakes states, especially Michigan and New York. And in fact, in the rebellion of 1837 in Upper Canada, Universalists were viewed with suspicion in what was still British North America. And the suspicion was well-founded since they were, in fact, blatant supporters of the rebels. Even before this, a quarter of a century before this, during the War of 1812, the Universalists had generally favored the annexation of Canadian territories and the invasion of Canada by United States troops. This is a little known fact about Universalism that they don't teach you when they're trying to encourage you to embrace the gentle and inclusive name. I don't always harbor I don't always harbor kind of mean-spirited grudges against other people, and this isn't exactly mean-spirited, but I don't harbor the same uncritical memories either of Universalism as always being kind of like a warm kitten in our tradition compared to the Unitarian tradition, which was cold and rational. Because in fact, the Universalists of a bygone era saw Canada as something to conquer, not as a neighboring state. And so our relationship with the Universalist side of our tradition has necessarily been, as they say on Facebook, complicated. Meanwhile, the Unitarian congregations in Montreal and Toronto were likewise populated largely by expatriate Americans and British colonists, and the ministers who served both Unitarian and Universalist congregations came from outside of Canada. The Unitarian congregations in central Canada in those days bore unmistakable marks of the Anglo-Irish and American roots of their founders, which were largely Presbyterian and Congregationalist. They felt, for some, like Presbyterian or Congregationalist churches that had lost their theology. The Universalists never made it far into Western Canada. In fact, they made it as far as present-day Thunder Bay, where the 1891 census records that there were two Universalists living in Fort William. And that, in a nutshell, that simple fact, 1891, two Universalists, Fort William, tells you the complete history of Universalism in Western Canada. Right here, it's all yours. On the prairies, Unitarianism first emerged among renegade Lutherans in the Icelandic immigrant community, who had been influenced by the Western Unitarian Conference and the Free Religious Association, both of which prefigured the religious humanism that dominated our movement during an extended period in the 20th century. English-speaking Unitarian congregations in Western Canada, from Winnipeg to the Pacific Coast, had more of a Methodist flavor overall, in contrast to those Presbyterians and Congregationalists down east, and because they had a different assortment of founders than the Eastern Canadian congregations. Unlike the United States, where Unitarian and Universalist expansion was driven by New Englanders moving west until well into the 20th century. Unitarian congregations in Western Canada developed mostly in isolation from the congregations in the eastern regions of the country. Yes, even in Duluth, it was expatriate New Englanders who arrived and established the first Unitarian congregation there. And thank goodness, because it was the minister in Duluth, an early minister there, Reverend Franklin Southworth, who was dispatched as the emissary of Boston Unitarianism to the Icelandic renegades on the Canadian prairies. He was sent because he was the closest Unitarian minister to the Icelanders in Western Canada, or so they say. But in point of fact, he was the closest nice minister to the Icelandic Unitarians on the prairies. There was a closer minister, William Ballou, down in Fargo, North Dakota, but he wasn't nearly as nice, as inclusive, or as accommodating as was Franklin Chester Southworth. And the only reason I can say this to you today is because both men are dead. Because the guidelines of the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association would have required that I not cast aspersions on Dr. Ballou. The picture I've painted is admittedly a bit of an oversimplification, but it is still a relatively fair representation of the state of our liberal religious tradition in Canada until about a century ago. Canadian Unitarianism did not exist. It is about a century ago, just a little over a century, that the first hints of Canadian Unitarian identity begin to appear. Until then, Unitarianism and Universalism in Canada were largely characterized by regionalism, and individual congregations were closely tied to the particular U.S. regions from which they sprang, which may be why there was, in those days, no Unitarian congregation in Fort William or Port Arthur. The Unitarians in Duluth simply didn't care enough about this place to come up here and establish a congregation. They were also having some challenges of their own within their congregation, but to the extent that Unitarian pockets were influenced from elsewhere, it was nearby. Duluth was so busy with the Icelanders in Winnipeg that they had no time for Thunder Bay. They had a big territory and a big responsibility to look after, but they did have a significant influence on the prairie Unitarians, in the same way that Vermont Universalists had a significant influence on Universalism in the eastern townships of Quebec. Canadian Unitarianism didn't exist, but cross-border relationships were in fact strong. The Icelanders didn't do much of anything for 20 years without consulting with the good ministers who served in Duluth. It was a natural kind of relationship. It wasn't until the First World War that a genuinely Canadian consciousness began to emerge among Unitarian congregations here, owing partly to the war itself and partly to the burst of church planting that occurred during the previous decade. And this consciousness was expressed in the short-lived Canadian Unitarian Association that was organized in Winnipeg in 1913. In the 1920s, though, or by the 1920s, the old status quo had returned, and it prevailed until the next World War. Canadian Unitarians were a frontier branch of the American Unitarian Association, and the country's Universalists likewise looked southward for their denominational relationships. Finally, Finally, the Canadian Unitarian was launched in 1941, the publication, 20 years before the Canadian Unitarian Council was established. And while it ceased publication 5 years later, that publication, more than anything else, contributed to the sense that there might be something different and distinctive about the Canadian expression of Unitarianism. Before the war was over, Angus Cameron of Montreal had circulated a proposal for establishing a Council of Canadian Unitarian Churches, but despite a positive response, his draft constitution sat on the shelf, and like so many documents that have landed on a shelf, it died there. In 1955, at a gathering of the Western Canada Unitarian Conference in Wynyard, Saskatchewan, the idea of creating a national Unitarian organization was discussed and approved. But merger between the Universalists and the Unitarians was the dominant denominational issue of that day, so it wasn't until 1961 that the Canadian Unitarian Council was formed, on the same day that the two denominations merged to become one. It might be said that Unitarian Universalism as we know it and Canadian Unitarianism share the exact same birthday. Although there was a lingering debate about whether or not to use the Universalist label in Canada. Since that denomination's numbers here had dwindled to three congregations with only a couple of hundred members. The Canadian Unitarian Council became the principal forum for the Canadian expression of our faith, and it sought to do so in meaningful ways. Sometimes the conversations were rich and deep, such as when contextual theology became the focus for ministers and we explored the influences of our different geography, literature, and civic institutions on spiritual life. This is, in fact, why this vast and rich terrain along the northern and western shores of Lake Superior are theologically and not just geologically and geographically significant. They have an impact on what it means to be a Unitarian Universalist in this place. We cannot help but be influenced by the magnificent landscape, the environment that surrounds us. It has spiritual implications. And those kind of spiritual implications defy international boundaries. Other times, the congregations could be somewhat trivial, indulging in the narcissism of small differences at which we can sometimes be expert, which accentuated apparent differences between Canadian and American Unitarian Universalists that scarcely existed in reality. Still other times, the conversations were simply confusing, and we talked past one another, often using the same words to say different things. Thus began the series of quarrels within Unitarian Universalism as Canadian Unitarians sought to express themselves on the continental stage, especially in the context of general assemblies and gatherings of districts that crossed the international boundary, both generally poor places to explore your spirituality. In my view, the dialogue generally tended towards magnifying the differences and overlooking the commonalities. Spiritual and secular considerations became increasingly blurred, and resource disparities often played out as identity conflicts. Sometimes denominational decisions were made as much based on who occupied the White House as upon genuine spiritual concerns. The centennial of Canadian Confederation in 1967 proved to be a watershed moment for both this country and Canadian Unitarianism, such as it existed at the time. There was a swelling of civic pride and a distinctive national identity growing among Canadians. And their then two-year-old flag and lingering debate about the proper words to O Canada came together and helped to, despite these things, there was a sense felt among Canadians that inspired the Unitarians to consider for the very first time, the question of leaving the Unitarian Universalist Association altogether, to establish a completely separate denominational body. After all, the Lutherans were doing it, and if Lutherans could do it, why couldn't we? The idea was overwhelmingly rejected at the time, but those who favored it showed significant strength numerically, and even greater strength in their dogged determination to move in that direction. That's the first third. But fortunately, they didn't give me any water. So, oh. Well, lucky you. Well, by gosh, they made that mistake before, and I thought that this was intentional, that it was never going to happen again. Now, relax. The first third is the longer third. Fast forward 3 decades, and I was a newly ordained minister in search of a pulpit. And the most appealing ones on offer were south of the border, I'm sorry to say. And by that I mean not to include Mexico, but our south of the border. By this point in time, I had already been active in denominational affairs for some 15 years in a variety of roles. As a district board member, continental committee member, district executive for Western Canada, and small congregations growth consultant in both Prairie Star and Central Midwest districts, in which capacity among the congregations I visited was the First Unitarian Church of Duluth. Many people were surprised to discover that I wasn't already a minister. My wife Cindy and I were hesitant to leave Canada with our daughters, notwithstanding the fact that Garrison Keillor maintained that Minnesotans are nice enough to be Canadians. And it's true. Besides, Minnesota wasn't the only state on our... I would just like to say that the conversation on reconciliation has been postponed. And if you have ever read William Ellery Channing's Baltimore sermon, the big one, the one that gave birth to modern-day Unitarianism, if you have ever read it out loud to yourself in a normal speaking voice, you will know that Dr. Channing held the congregation in Baltimore, exactly 200 years ago this year, in fact, he held the congregation in Baltimore enraptured for more than 3 hours. And then there was the rest of the service. We'll do just fine here. Anyway, back to my manuscript, Minnesota wasn't the only state on our list, although it topped the list with Washington and Oregon, Wisconsin and Massachusetts rounding out our top 5. That didn't stop the Ministerial Settlement Office from sending my name to congregations in Kansas and Nebraska, not to mention Illinois and New York, all fine states. I was fawned over by several congregations, rejected outright by others, and thoroughly considered on the surface by the rest. During the course of my entire career, only one Canadian congregation has ever expressed interest in me, and the house rules of the Ministerial Settlement Office made me ineligible to be considered by that one. So it was America or bust for my ministry. Knowing, or believing I knew, like good old Farley Mowat, how different Americans were from Canadians, even the Unitarian Universalist ones, I sketched out a series of questions to raise with search committees in order to weed out the congregations where it would be difficult for me to feel comfortable as a Canadian. Did they consider healthcare to be a right or a privilege? How did they feel about universal public health insurance compared to private coverage? Did they support common sense firearms regulation, or was the Second Amendment up there with the first principle? What was their commitment to battling racism? Did they support the Equal Rights Amendment, which was settled in Canada by the Persons case decades before? Were they supportive of civil unions for same-sex couples? Who was audacious enough in those days to imagine that we weren't still at least two generations away from marriage equality? What did they consider to be the justifiable use of military might? What was their commitment to environmental sustainability? How did they feel about Canada? I could go on, but you get the gist of my ridiculous questions. As it turned out, this litmus test was completely and utterly, indeed thoroughly, useless. After 15 years of working with Unitarian Universalists on both sides of the border, I should have known better. Study after study and survey after survey from 1937 until the turn of the century, including studies that I had conducted on behalf of the Unitarian Universalist Association myself, had revealed no great divergence of Unitarian Universalist attitudes or beliefs by nation. There are regional variations. There are peculiarities stemming from the history of individual congregations and the idiosyncrasies of their ministers. There are even some differences related to the size of congregations. But there's more harmony crossing the border than discord. But I had been desperate to find out the most comfortable place for my Canadian family to settle as strangers in a strange land, as the Bible says. I'd fallen into the trap of assuming that liberal, progressive, tolerant, inclusive, compassionate views were somehow distinctly Canadian virtues. I know none of you are that arrogant and never have been, but I set a trap for my spiritual kin across the line, and they sniffed around it and walked away from the trap because they were no more drawn to values that I dislike than I was. Like Farley Mowat, my discovery of America revealed the realization that I had nurtured a conviction that the image of America projected by both its most zealous nativists and nationalists, as well as its most vigorous detractors, was somehow one with reality, when it wasn't. And just like Mowat, I found my grounds for doubting the image as a consequence of an incredible journey into the minds and hearts of my compatriots. Unitarian Universalists, whose values, views, and commitments were not markedly different from my own, just because surveyors and treaty negotiators had drawn an arbitrary line along the 49th parallel. Yes, there are differences. Our countries govern themselves differently. Our patriotic symbols are unique to our respective lands. The civic issues that call for prophetic witness of religious communities may well vary. But Unitarian Universalist values and the Unitarian Universalist temperament are strikingly similar in both countries. We are more alike than different, far more alike. And the differences that do exist are more regional than national. Thunder Bay has as much or more in common with Duluth as it does with Mississauga. The regional variations add texture and color to our spiritual communities, and they defy rhetoric that attaches itself to humanly created boundary lines. For instance, one of the most distinctive regional variations that bind Thunder Bay and Duluth, if you're paying attention, is the Finnish influence found at both the Lakehead and across northern Minnesota. Not only does the historic Finnish presence influence the larger culture across the region, but the Iron Range was the heart of the Finnish Unitarian movement during the first half of the 20th century. Next to the Icelandic Unitarians, the Finnish Unitarians were the most numerous among the efforts at ethnic outreach by the American Unitarian Association. These congregations had their own ministers. They published a Finnish Unitarian hymnal. If I'd have known about the theme for the music, I could have sent a copy along. And there was a small but determined Finnish Unitarian presence that extended from a Siemens Bethel in New York City to the mines of Montana, and from there all the way to Malcolm Island in British Columbia. But the epicenter was Virginia, Minnesota, and the presence of the congregation and ministers there touched Duluth and Thunder Bay and countless other communities across the region. Its regional importance was significant, and it denied boundaries. But you don't have to take my word for it. Following the grand exodus of Canadian Unitarians from the UUA in 2002, I've been struck by how little difference it made in anything but organizational structures and the ease of international relationships. This is not a criticism, just an observation. As the old saying goes, the more things change, the more they stay the same. If the results have not been as grand as the possibilities once envisioned, the possibilities and promise themselves still remain to be fulfilled. However, I take heart from the fact that Unitarian Universalism remains much the same on both sides of the border, changed by the progress of time, perhaps, but not so much by decisions about how we organize ourselves. The telltale sign of this for me was the process that Canadians undertook following the separation of 2002 to review and revise the Statement of Principles and Sources. We needed a distinctly Canadian one. After considerable reflection and discussion, the effort produced no changes to this sublime articulation of the core values of Unitarian Universalism. It remains the same wherever you visit one of our congregations, save for a prickly few who didn't like the principles and sources from the get-go. We covenant to affirm and promote, says the preamble of the principles, and that covenant holds firm on both sides of the 49th parallel. The worth and dignity of persons, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, conscience and compassion, justice and the democratic process, world community and peace, and love, not just respect for the interdependent web of existence. These values are the heart of Unitarian Universalism, wherever it is found, here in Thunder Bay, down in Duluth, across the land in Boston, or out in Vancouver. These values are the heart of our faith, now as they were before, and they shall be moving into the future.